All right, it is Monday after a holiday weekend. Back to work for many of us, although some of you are having that 4th of July weekend hangover, aren't you? It's Jason, Dan is here. Not you, Dan Cook. You're ready. You're fired up. You had a bunch of days off, didn't you?
I had a 4-day weekend, yeah. And does that qualify as a bunch?
Yes.
Okay.
I don't know. When's the last?
I don't know either. That's why I'm asking.
I feel like I need to take some time off.
I think so, too. No, I mean, I think you deserve
Kate Raddatz, time off. What is Dan Cook saying to me?
I'm
listen
to
that.
I think you work very hard, and you deserve some time off. Right, Kate?
Yes, you work. You're a hard worker. Yes.
Thank you. You work very hard.
Yes.
Kate Raddatz with McClung PR is with us. Let's play your open. I jumped the gun here. I got too excited.
She's an Emmy Award-winning reporter.
Yeah, I love it.
She's a senior public relations pro. She can belt out the national anthem better than most.
It's a process. Like, you got to find someone to do it with because it's not fun by yourself. So I don't know.
But maybe the most important role she plays coming at the stories of the day from the perspective of a millennial mom. Let's all learn a thing or two from the mind and filter of Kate Raddatz.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah. There's what's happening.
This is the Rad Report.
And now it's official. Kate Raddatz with McClung PR is with us. You need the open. Do you ever...
I wasn't sure if it was my time. I'm like, I didn't hear a song.
Right. You know, in the open, it talks about you singing the national anthem. I don't know. Did you see the story in the newspaper? I think it was in print on Sunday, but it was online this weekend. Talking about how difficult it is to sing our national anthem.
Yes. It is a very difficult song to sing. And obviously people have a lot of opinions about how they want it to be sung. And the general consensus I have gotten over the years is people really like it when you keep it simple. That is not a time that people want you to do a bunch of frills and extra notes and whatever. That's just the consensus I have gotten. But yes, it is a challenging song to sing. And when people are singing it, they're usually not in a space where it's super easy to sing either. So yes.
Right. In a stadium, when you have like sort of the echo and trying to cancel that out and just listen to yourself and say, like, it's difficult. It is difficult, I think.
It's very difficult. I could be wrong. It's been a while since I've sung at Target Field, but I want to say that was particularly difficult. So, yes, it totally depends on the venue, but yes.
I like it fast. I like it like...
You like it to clip along.
This is not a funeral dirge. I do not like the slow, like, let it rip, But it is... I think I've told you this before. I used to practice singing this song. I was a strange child, let's be honest.
Okay.
But I would practice singing the national anthem in our unfinished basement growing up.
Okay.
Because it was pretty good acoustics there in the unfinished basement. I like.
Sure. We all have a place. Yes.
That was my place, and it was out of the way. And I would practice our anthem, and I would practice O Canada, because I thought there's a pretty good chance that I was going to be singing that at Chicago Stadium at the
Blackhawks
game.
I did not know this. Okay.
Yeah. And O Canada, much easier song. Much easier song.
Did it ever happen? Did I miss something?
No, I never even tried to do this. I've never even auditioned. I did sing the seventh inning stretch once at a Twins game, but that's about as close as it gets.
That's pretty good. I think that's pretty good. It is a tough, but you say you don't like it slow. These are the things I think about when I hear people go really slow. I go, ooh, I wonder if they can't hear themselves well. Because sometimes if you go, you tend to slow down when you're waiting to hear yourself. So I don't know. I'm always sympathetic to the people singing, you know, but I do enjoy it. I love listening to it.
It does. I will say, like, as much as I am empathetic to the argument that maybe we should change our national anthem, that this one isn't a great national anthem. I think it's not a great national anthem. Objectively, but emotionally, it still does. Like, I always get like sort of the butterflies, you know.
Can anyone watch Whitney Houston's version and not just feel, if I'm having a bad day, I will pull up that video,
right?
And I am ready to go. So,
yes. I know. I was thinking about, so I was going to open up the phone lines last week and have people try to sing the national anthem.
But oh, boy.
I thought better. I thought better of that idea. I think
it was a creative thought. It was creative.
Like, I'll give you the words and let's see if you can let it rip. It's just, it's a
someone
difficult.
Would be good. I bet you'd get somebody out of many.
Somebody
would be good.
That's right. Did you guys, your kids are young. It's sort of prime, like great 4th of July age, I would think. What did you guys do for the 4th?
It's really become one of my favorite holidays. It's like getting Christmas in July, because my whole family, we got to see almost all of my nieces and nephews. All the cousins get together. We're on the water. Only Saturday was kind of the iffy weather day. We haven't had great, it feels like it's been a while since we've had great weather, and it was great weather. So yeah, we were just on the lake a lot. We do the bike parades. They just love, it's just really nice being with family, and our kids grow up with their cousins. So I just love it. It's like peak summertime to me. So.
Yes. I agree where you say, It is funny that it's peak summertime, but also there's a little bit where it feels like, is it over? Is summer almost over now?
When you're a kid in school, you always felt like, you're like, oh, well, summer's over halfway.
Yes, right. The back to school sales are happening.
I already started shopping.
It's
yep,
Target
I'm already
Circle
doing it.
Week. It's Best yep. Buy. Blue, I don't know what they call their thing. It's has Amazon Prime thing. Has that started yet? I don't know. All of the things are happening.
Well, and there's always a blogger. There's always at least one who will post the pretty reel that says, it's all these images of fall. It's like, this is only 60 days away. I'm like, why are we talking about this?
No. I haven't been on a boat yet. So I'm not ready to throw up the halfway point.
Oh, we got lots of time. July is the best. It's like 95 degrees every day. This is the best part of summer. So you've got lots of time.
Kate Raddatz is with us. Kate, do you think of yourself as a cool person?
No. And
do others think you're cool?
I mean, if they're my friend, hopefully they think I'm cool. Depending on how you describe cool, I would say there are personality traits that make me cool, but overall I don't generally can describe myself as a cool person.
There is a new study that identifies six traits.
Okay.
In coolness. Because there are certain people, and I think about this like when I'm scrolling Instagram, and this is my, like, I love fashion, and my number one question I always find myself asking when I see an outfit that I like and think I would like to buy, and the question is, do I like this outfit, or is this just an incredibly cool person who's being photographed?
Oh.
You're like, this would look stupid on me because I'm not cool enough.
Sure.
You know?
That makes sense.
So this study says, here are the six traits of coolness.
Okay.
And this is as written up in the New York Times. But I looked. It's a real study. It's not just like some kind of dumb survey. It's from the University of Arizona, University of Georgia, published by the American Psychological Association. So here we go. Number one, extroverted. I think that's usually true. Sorry, Dan Cook, you're out. Number two, hedonistic. I think that's right. Yep, like a little element of like, are you indulgent in some way?
Okay. Right? Okay.
Powerful. Yeah. Adventurous, open, and autonomous. This is from 12 countries around the world. And the traits were almost all the same, no matter where you were. So in the past, the research said that coolness is linked with friendly, competent, trendy, and attractive. But there's something more than that, right? Like there's like whenever I think of somebody that is cool, there's always like an element of like there's a little element of danger, a little bit of risk taking.
Sure. Yes.
So in that term, you would not be cool.
I would not be. No, I'm definitely a rule follower. Oh, yeah, I would not count. This explains why I was not also cool in high school. Yes.
I'm trying to think like media people in town. Are there any media people who read as cool?
Ooh.
Like Paul Majors?
I feel bad if I see. I think Frank is cool.
Frank
is cool to me. I think Amelia is cool.
Yeah. So I think Amelia gives cool. Frank, no.
No. Oh, no. I think Frank is pretty cool. I think he's pretty cool. But I also know Frank. You know, when you know, it's like.
Yes, Frank is cool. But, like, I don't know that he gives. I
don't
know
that he gives. Maybe I can't, you know, think of just.
I'm just thinking, like, the
perception.
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm trying to think. I mean, I'm sure there's
Rosen. I think Mark Rosen's a little cool. I think Amelia's cool.
She's cool.
Robin Robinson. Now she was cool. The Fox 9 anchor when she was in town, she gave cool.
Yes, definitely.
Yeah,
for sure.
But
it is a little bit of a rule breaker, I think, type probably thing. More of the adventurous.
All right, text him with your cool. Who gives you cool vibes in Minnesota? 651-461-9226. We'll break. Maybe you guys will come up with something better than Kate and I did. Back in just a minute on Drive Time. All right, we're talking about the traits that make somebody cool. Kate Raditz is with us, the Rad Report. Texter's coming in with a couple cool names. I don't know. I feel like no one's really nailing it. One texter
said, "We don't know cool people."
maybe that's just it. Michelle Tafoya, back on her sideline days, I think like she was very cool. When you're in the sports world, there's a coolness. You're just kind of cool by association, right? Michael Grady,
absolutely.
The Timberwolves play-by-play guy, cool.
Marielle Mose is my friend, so, you know,
I feel like I have to say she
is very cool.
Yep, she does she gives cool vibes.
Yes.
Oh, another texter, if there's somebody, like, I've met a lot of lawmakers. So most lawmakers, not cool. Most politicians, not cool. Bobby Joe Champion, this texter says, that's, Bobby Joe's got a cool, little bit of a coolness to him. I think, I think the Speaker of the House, Lisa Damon, she's got like a little cool edge to her. Yeah. Your boss, Brian McClung, not cool.
he's out of town, so we could say that.
That's fine, yeah. I don't know. Would he argue with that? I'm not sure.
I don't know. Yeah, he would probably not. He would probably not. Most people would describe him as cool. He would probably not.
No. Yeah, I don't know. This is not exactly a cool town. You know what I mean? Like,
no,
we're Minnesota.
I don't use that term ever to describe, ever. I don't ever think of the word cool, ever. I never look at someone and think, oh, they're really cool, or what they're wearing is really cool. I just don't.
I kind of do.
Really?
Like there are certain people you'll be like out to one of our viewers on YouTube said Sean Sherman is objectively cool, the sous chef from Owamni. He is cool.
Oh, sure.
Prince, of course, like yes, peak of cool. Yeah, I don't know. We're out.
I don't know.
Alyssa and I were at the Four Seasons patio, the Riva Terrace, yesterday, and these two guys walked in, and they were young and had like sort of the flowy young guy hair, and they were wearing what looked like almost like I don't know, like Western style shirts.
Okay.
And Alyssa's like, what do you think their story is? It's our favorite game to play when we're out. It's the create the fictional story about other people. So like at one table next to us, I'm pretty sure was a pilot and a flight attendant. They were both married, or at least they both had wedding rings. And his body language said, this is just a couple of friends. And her body language said, ready for takeoff. So,
calling these people out.
That was very interesting. And then these two guys came in, and you're like, whoa, these are a couple of cool cats. Cause it was just the way that their clothing and whatever. I don't know. It gave cool vibes. You're too suburban. You're not having enough cool fun, maybe.
If I say someone's cool, I'll say, oh, they're really cool. He's a really cool guy. I mean, They're really fun. Oh. They're really nice.
Yeah, that's not cool. That's just
apparently not.
No,
apparently not.
It's like cool. There's like a vibe that some people just give you. Like I was at the Get Down Coffee Shop in North Minneapolis today, and Houston White, who owns it, it's like that guy is objectively cool. I always feel like a absolute nerd, you know?
Sure.
There are certain people you're around, you're like, oof.
They exude cool.
Yeah, and you're like,
apparently I need to find that pool.
Jonathan on YouTube is saying he thinks he's cool. Why not?
There you go. There's nothing wrong with that. Yeah.
One texter said it's subjective. But I mean, of course, like yes, and like there are certain people where you're just like, you know, there are certain Hollywood stars, right? You think George Clooney, cool.
He's cool.
Brad Pitt,
absolutely.
Cool.
Yes.
Samuel L. Jackson, cool. Charlie XCX,
for sure.
If you want like a pop star today, like there's a coolness there. Why? We don't know. And so, well, maybe it's these six traits, according to the New York Times. Who knows?
Yeah, introverts have, it always puts the extrovert on there. That's tough. It's always... They make it harder to be an introvert. They always associate cool with being more, you know,
which is kind of weird,
more
like,
extroverted.
Yeah, but you think about like Bob Dylan. There's a guy that.
Right.
So I think sometimes there's like a mysterious coolness that
happens.
Absolutely.
Yes. Yes.
Fast Company said there's a new trend emerging among Gen Z career professionals. Have you heard about this new trend? It's called micro retirement. Micro retirement. Now, does micro retirement sound good to you, Kate? Does that sound intriguing?
It depends what it is. Depends what it is. How long is this micro retirement?
Micro retirement is, I believe a lot of us would just call it a vacation.
Okay.
But, so... So,
okay,
but we need like a cool trend. Cool. It's the cool factor.
It's cool. We like to label everything.
Micro retirements involve taking a 1 to 2 week break from work.
Okay.
Every 12 to 18 months. But it's a little bit different. It's like an intentional unpaid time to rest and recharge.
An unpaid time?
Unpaid time. It's a retirement. So like maybe you quit a job and then find a new job when you're ready to work again.
That's dumb. For a week? No, thank you. No.
Maybe you set up a plan with your employer that allows you to take unpaid frequent work breaks.
Okay, why don't you find a place to work that offers a thing called vacation time and just take a week off and do it more than 18 months.
Micro retirement. Just wanted to introduce everybody to that. Genius.
We love labeling.
Good job, Gen Z. You've done it. Kate, very fun. Thanks for hanging with us today.
Hey, thank you so much.
Kate Raddatz, The Rad Report. She is a big shot at McClung PR. Don't tell her boss that I said he's not cool. We are going to break. When we come back, I want to revisit the absolute tragedy in Texas from this weekend. Nearly 100 people killed in flooding. It's bringing attention to the issue of warnings. And where are we on warnings? We are going to speak with an expert from the University of Wisconsin-Madison in just a minute here on Drive Time. All right, I want to talk about warnings, storm warnings. Are there too many are we as consumers, like, are we doing our job as far as following them and paying attention to get some insight? We go to Chris Vigasky, who is a meteorologist. He is the manager of the Wisconsin Environmental Mesonet at the University of Wisconsin College of Agricultural and Life Sciences. And if you know me, Chris, I love a mesonet.
Who doesn't love a mesonet these days?
I mean, I tell you what. Thanks, thanks for being with us today. Talk to me about the warnings, because obviously we're all, I mean, watching what happened in Texas is absolutely devastating, heartbreaking. The flooding so fast, and the death toll, 95. I mean, my goodness. But there's been, of course, the usual sort of political finger pointing you have. There have been conversations about the National Weather Service and warnings. But I know warnings, that the issue of warnings, are we overwarning? Are we communicating them clearly? I know that's something you've been interested in, right?
I have been. You know, it's always, it's been a topic of conversation among meteorologists for decades. I mean, you can look back to the early 1990s when we were even saying, is a forecast good if we get everything right, but nobody responds to it?
Huh, yeah.
And that's where we're at. Still, it's, we can issue a severe thunderstorm warning, we can issue a tornado warning, we can issue a flash flood warning, but is that warning getting to the public in a way that gets them to respond the way that we want them to respond, or the way that they need to respond to save their lives? And that's the big question, and it's the question that we're going to be working on for years to come.
Yeah, it is such a fascinating question, right? Because, and I think about this as, now I'm a talk show host, but I spent 25, 30 years in television news, where you think, all right, you can do the greatest story in the world, but if nobody sees it, what's it good for? What's the point? And I think that's sort of the question in the meteorological world, right?
It really is. You know, we put out, the National Weather Service put out warnings and watches July 3rd, July 4th, at 1 o'clock in the afternoon, there's a flood watch for Central Texas. At 1 o'clock in the morning, flash flood warning for Kerrville. At 4 o'clock in the morning, flash flood emergency, that's the highest level of warning for Kerrville, saying you need to get to higher ground. And it's a question of, how do you respond to that in the middle of the night? Do you have your WEA alerts turned on your phone so that the alarm starts blaring? A lot of people have turned those off. Do you have people that are looking at the warning and just ignoring it? I've seen a couple of cases of that happening in Texas. And then if you don't have the WEA alerts turned on your phone, how else are you getting that warning? Do you have a NOAA weather radio? Do you have a phone app that is from your local TV station that's sending you notices? And then when you get that warning, are you looking at that and really saying, okay, this is something that's going to affect me, I need to take action, I need to move to higher ground, I need to go to a shelter?
So, Chris, you're in Wisconsin, where the geography is sort of similar to what we have here in the metro in Minnesota. And I definitely, like, I looked at this, and I got to be honest, like, when I see a flash flood warning in our part of the country, I pay attention to it, but I sort of, you know what I mean? I barely pay attention to it, because we don't, I don't know that. Well, one, there are so many warnings already. Two, I'm more concerned about tornadoes around here. Three, I'm not, there's no risk that my home is going to get washed away in a flash flood based on where I live. Am I wrong to, you know, this weekend I'm looking at it, I'm like, man, I should I be paying more attention to this stuff? And also the practical question of, there's a lot of warnings. There's a lot of warnings. I mean, should we adjust our life every single time something comes out?
You know, I think that when a warning comes out, and a lot of people do this already, but when a warning comes out, people tend to look for confirmation. You look to the TV station and see if they've got a picture of the flooding or a picture of the tornado.
Yeah.
So people need to do that. It helps to have confirmation. You know, you don't always just grab one piece of information and run with it. And, you know, certainly here in Wisconsin, over there in Minnesota, right along the river, that's, you know, if a flood warning comes out for the river and you're along it, you really need to consider
for
that.
Sure, yeah.
If you're a little bit further away, you know, you can take that step to do some additional confirmation. Down in Texas, in Hill Country, which is where this took place, it's called Hill Country for a reason. There's a lot of hills, canyons, valleys, yeah, that funnel all of this water into a single channel, which is why you can get these extreme rises in the river. And we saw the Guadalupe River go from a couple of feet to over 25 feet in, you know, a matter of minutes to an hour or so. So it's really very dependent on where you are, but it's always important to pay attention to the warnings. And when you receive one, to think about what's going on, see what's going on, and make a decision, and don't just, you know, scroll by it.
Chris Vigasky is with us. He's a meteorologist at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. So, Chris, I have so many questions. Let's start with this overnight issue, because we had tornadoes in the overnight hours here in Minnesota a couple weekends ago. Overnight storms freak me out. It is a time where, you know, often the media will be on, but sometimes cuts in staffing and everything, you don't always have the kind of wall-to-wall media coverage that you might have if it happened during regular hours. What could we be doing better to get that warning information kind of to the finish line, to the user, to the neighbor in those overnight hours? It's hard.
It really is. You know, the overnight is kind of a worst case scenario. We see the most tornado fatalities. We see the most flooding fatalities at night. People are asleep, or if they are out, they don't see the tornado. They don't see the water coming over the roadway. So it's especially important to be thinking about what are we doing for these overnight events. And one thing that is always recommended is to have multiple ways to receive that warning information. Things fail, and yeah, Nothing is perfect 100% of the time. Your phone, you may have thought you plugged it in, and the plug didn't work, and now your phone's dead, and you don't receive anything over the phone. So you need to have a backup option. So, you know, it's always about thinking of, what am I going to do if? So, you know, pay attention to things throughout the day. Know if there's going to be severe weather overnight, or if there's a chance of severe weather overnight. Get your phone charged before you go to bed. Have that weather radio and have that program to turn on if a warning is issued for your area. Know what you're going to do if a warning is issued for your area. Because if that alarm goes off and wakes you up at 1:30, 2 in the morning, you're going to spend a little bit of time waking yourself up before you know what's going on. So if you have that plan in place, you're not trying to develop a plan while you're groggy and while you're trying to figure out what's going on.
Some of this, Chris, and understandably, some of this, you know, people go political on these sorts of things. And I think, you know, the impact of budget cuts and staffing cuts always should be analyzed. But in this case, from what I've been able to ascertain, first of all, federal budget cuts don't take effect until October. It seemed like they did have extra meteorologists on board in Texas in the overnight hours. And these warnings did come out when you look at the timeline. You're an expert. When you look at this, do you see anything there? Is there anything in the, you know, President Trump blaming or the federal budget blaming?
You know, in this situation, I don't think we saw impacts from any of the cuts that have been ongoing. There are 6 to 7 weather balloon sites that are around Texas, and they all launched their balloons the evening of July 3rd. And we've been seeing some issues with balloon launches around the United States in the last few months. But this isn't always going to be the case where everything, you know, works out the way we want it to. If we continue with cuts to staffing, cuts to funding, that impacts our ability to get a good forecast and to get those warnings out. And if the new budget goes through as is, if Congress doesn't make changes to it, it would zero out a lot of the atmospheric research that's done at national labs, at cooperative institutes that are doing work now to issue better forecasts and issue better warnings in the future to create new forecast tools. So the funding needs to be there so that we can continue to get as good a forecast and as good of warnings out as we can.
The real issue, it seems, is are we taking these seriously enough? And frankly, in this scenario, and I think we all hate to look at a scenario and say sometimes catastrophic things happen. And in the middle of the night, in an area with probably questionable connectivity, frankly, some safety questions about if you tried to evacuate everybody in the middle of the night, it's dark and windy and narrow and hilly, and that brings up other safety issues. I mean, sometimes, I hate to be defeatist about it, but sometimes just terrible, terrible, terrible things happen.
You know, sometimes things do happen, but I do want to point to a success story that there was another camp along the Guadalupe River there, and they evacuated in the middle of the night and got people to safety before the floodwaters reached the camp. So it is possible that even with everything working and conspiring against you, that if you are paying attention to the weather, you are paying attention to the warnings, you can make those decisions to get people to safety.
Yeah, that quick action. I mean, that was the Mo Ranch that evacuated 70 kids and adults. And they were monitoring it. And it is a lesson for all of us, I think, how important it is to take this stuff seriously. Chris, it's so interesting getting your perspective. And I really appreciate you spending some time with us today.
Well, thanks for inviting me.
Chris Vigasky, meteorologist at University of Wisconsin in Madison. We let him on despite that, but, you know. There's a little bit of wisdom in Madison, too. 449. That's a Marquette grad talking here on Drive Time. I have performed Take Me Out the Ball Game before at a Twins game. I was nervous. I was excited. It was such an honor. It was a very different approach to what Cubs fans saw and heard at Wrigley Field yesterday.
All right, Zach and Cubs fans, are you ready?
This is Alex Cooper, podcaster. Call me dad, call her dad. No. Now just wait. Because Cubs fans don't play. Oh, they're just absolutely torching her. No. That's a no.
Not good. Especially because that's such a cherished tradition.
Harry Carey made it legendary.
Yes.
And this is another example of people who allow their own success to make them think that they're the main character in every single scenario.
Mm-hmm.
And when you are asked to be a part of a cherished tradition, you are asked to be a part of something bigger than you, not to make you the thing. And I understand the richness of one Jason DeRussia saying there are times that you do not need to be the main character. But there are times, and that is one of them. She is just absolutely getting torched. And I'm here for all of it. All of it. It is.
And she'll turn it into click somehow, I'm sure.
I'm sure she'll be fine. Like, whatever. But good for Chicago, right? Like, that is the correct reaction. Sometimes you gotta. I'm not a fan of, like, letting the rando who's doing the seventh. Don't boo them over at Target Field. But, like, you are not the main character. D-Rush Hour News headline coming up